welcome everybody to the Second Court of Appeals this morning. We have one case set for oral argument, and I understand that the parties have, counsel have checked in and are ready to go. Before we start, I'll introduce the panel. To my left is Justice Brian Walker. To my right is Justice Dabney Basil, and I am Elizabeth Kerr. So with that, I'll ask the clerk to call the case. Thank you. You may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. William Biggs on behalf of Appellant Tayton Finley. We're here on one issue before the court, and that is whether my client's rights to confrontation of witnesses against him under the Sixth Amendment were violated when the complaining witness testified behind a mask in a situation where there were no particularized findings justifying why, in her particular case, she should be allowed to wear a mask, unlike other scenarios, but I believe articulated by the state in several cases where there was a categorical mandate prohibiting masks. And those cases were also ones that took place in 2020. This is a case that arose in 2021 where it's clear to infer from the record that there was no mask requirement. No one was required to wear one. She was basically allowed to wear one because she felt like it. And the court is very clear, the Supreme Court, that there must be particularized findings to justify an encroachment on face-to-face confrontation.
So what form do you think those findings should have taken here? I mean, how granular a rule are you asking for?
Well, I don't think there has to be a granular rule, but there does need to be an in-depth inquiry as to her particular circumstances and why, in her case, it would be necessary for her in particular to wear a mask.
Even though we're dealing with a worldwide pandemic, you want the court every time to make a particularized finding that a mask was necessary.
Your Honor, I think the scenario would be different if there had been in place a categorical rule that all witnesses, all participants in the courtroom were wearing a mask. And I think the scenario would also be different prior to the wide availability of vaccines, which is what happened in this case and what distinguishes it from the cases cited by the state. So in this case, it's very clear from the record that no one's wearing a mask, and then this one witness, the most important witness in the whole trial, appears in a mask, and the findings have got to be far more than if she wants to wear a mask, I'm not going to tell her she can't.
So
that's just not... Sorry.
So I realize that the pandemic is kind of sui generis in many respects. Hopefully, won't happen again. But so what do you think should happen? Like, let's say it's a bad flu season, and somebody shows up to testify, and they say, "Your Honor, I would feel more comfortable wearing a mask." I mean, is there a line that we can draw, should draw? Because I can see a scenario where complaining witnesses might decide, hey, I think I would rather wear a mask because I don't want my face to be seen all the way, so I'm going to suggest that I be able to because of some flu or whatever. I mean, is that a danger in any of this?
Well, Your Honor, I think at the very minimum, the witness would need to cite a reason why they are more comfortable to wear a mask. I mean, at least cite a reason so we know why they're not wearing a mask. Here,
didn't the witness cite a reason in this case?
Your Honor, there really was no discussion about any reason why a mask was worn. It was all off the record, outside the presence of the witness, and the judge Well, actually, no, I think the witness may have been present outside the presence of the jury, and the judge just said, if she wants to wear one, I'm not going to tell her she can't wear one. That was really the extent of the inquiry as to why she in particular was wearing one and why no one else needed to wear one. That was the core difference between Coy and the subsequent decision in Maryland v. Craig. Those facts are very similar. One is where a child witnesses are behind a wall. That's Coy, and the court said that violated confrontation. Maryland versus Craig, we have one-way circuit television. So, again, the witness is not having to be face-to-face, but they upheld it in that scenario because there were particularized findings as to each of the child victims that was going to testify. They had an expert get on and explain why, as it relates to each and every individual, why it would cause them severe emotional distress, severe harm, and what specific reactions may arise. They also pointed out that it was the distress related specifically to confrontation face-to-face with the individual. It wasn't about being uncomfortable in a courtroom setting, because they said if that had been the discomfort, we could have arranged for alternatives to ensure that the constitutional rights were not encroached upon to any degree beyond what is necessary. And here, I think that's the whole problem, is we've not have any showing of why it was necessary for her to give her testimony behind a mask when no one else was. It's very clear in the record to me that no one else was wearing a mask. And
well, what would she have had to say to satisfy the burden you want to create?
Well, Your Honor, I wouldn't even necessarily say it would satisfy the burden, but it would certainly be a stronger case for the state if it was established that the witness perhaps had not been vaccinated, had underlying health conditions, that there were no alternative. No alternatives that existed in terms of the dimensions of the courtroom on where the witness could be placed so as to make sure that all precautions are taken to ensure her health. And if nothing else, just to cite reason why she's deciding to wear a mask, which we don't have here. And I think it's clear if you take the perspective of someone who's deciding to wear a mask. If someone wanted to give testimony against someone, testimony that's not true, perhaps, I think we would all agree it would be easier to do that behind a mask, hiding behind a mask. And that's exactly what the confrontation is designed to counter. And just
the witness was cross-examined for 3 hours, wasn't she?
Yes.
So certainly somebody had an adequate opportunity to test her credibility.
Well, Your Honor, as the Romero case points out, the ability to evaluate facial expressions is one of the central...
Romero is a little different situation. That person was completely in disguise. It wasn't that the simple fact that their nose and mouth was covered.
Well, Your Honor, I think really the only... The glaring distinction between Romero in this case is that Romero, the witness, was wearing sunglasses. And in this case, and he had a collar turned up, so the face was obscured. In this case, it was just the nose and the mouth. But really, it's all boiling down to whether the sunglasses changed the analysis in any significant way. I don't think that the disguise is that dramatically altered. And certainly, it would help for a jury to see facial expressions and how they react to testimony.
Let me stop you right there, just because I'm jumping the gun, and I apologize, but you know, I'm thinking about harm, and I'm thinking about how would this be harmful to the defense, and I'm not talking about the lack of the analysis, but the actual allowing a witness to testify against a defendant with a mask on. Can you tell the court, help us here, how are defendants harmed in this situation?
Your Honor, I think we could also cite the Romero case for that proposition, because in that case, the state was arguing that it was harmless, and Romero, the disguised witness, was a seemingly disinterested witness, just a bystander, really, who didn't want to testify, and the state argued that the testimony was cumulative because the complaining witness actually testified. Well, here, our masked witness is the complaining witness, who is obviously not a disinterested witness, and there is no other witness. And so if on Romero's facts, the court's finding harm, I think it's clear that the sole witness that brings this case together, without which the state could not make their case, I think it's difficult to conceive a scenario that would not be harmful when we're trying to, the sole defense is an effort to discredit her credibility. It's all coming down to her credibility, and so mask is interfering with our ability to show the jury how inconsistent or how unreliable she is. Sure, we can point out on cross-examination her numerous inconsistencies, of which there were many, but the jury's not getting the full perspective of this witness.
Because of demeanor. The lack of demeanor, the lack of seeing demeanor and the facial expressions. Is there anything else?
Well, Your Honor, the other thing talked about in Romero is that by wearing a mask, you're not fully accountable to the person that you're accusing. So it enables, if you have to take it from the perspective of someone's giving false testimony against someone, the mask enables them to hide from the defendant in a way that they don't if they're without a mask.
Romero said the lack of physical presence because witness believed disguise would confer degree of anonymity. That's not the situation in this case. Is there any evidence this complainant was trying to hide her identity or?
Well, Your Honor,
physical separation that Romero's talking about?
Your Honor, it's not purely anonymity, though, because we know that the defendant, the witness's name is known, his address is known, so it's not really an issue about anonymity. I do agree there is language in there about that, but it does enable them to hide in the sense of not having to be fully accountable to the defendant when you're accusing them of committing a serious crime.
But, I mean, this witness was there cross-examined for 3 hours. Everybody knew who she was. The only thing you couldn't see her was her nose and her mouth. She's not really arguing she wasn't physically present, which is what the principle is in Romero.
Well, Your Honor, again, I mean, the people, the witness was a known person. They did know who it was, and the defendant knew who it was. But I agree that it's not exactly the same scenario, but I do believe that physical presence is compromised because you're hiding, perhaps for different reasons, but you're hiding your ability to reveal yourself as you're giving testimony against someone else, which is what COI is all about.
Well, and of course we all know, I think it's just common sense and common knowledge that we take cues from not just seeing people's eyes, but from seeing their entire face when they're speaking to us, maybe unconscious to some extent or whatever. I know that at least I haven't been able to find any cases, pandemic related or otherwise, that agree with you on wearing a, you know, like a surgical kind of mask to testify because of a pandemic. But I did notice that at least in one federal case out of New Mexico, it was just an order, but in the Robertson case, the trial court, the government agreed, and the trial court entered an order because the government agreed with the defendant that a masked witness would pose a Sixth Amendment problem. And there was enough physical distance available in the courtroom to avoid any kind of health-related issues. So, you know, I think it could be characterized as an open question, at least in some courts' minds, whether there's a Sixth Amendment issue here.
Well, Your Honor, I think a key difference between that case as well as the other cases cited by the state is that in those cases, there were categorical bans on maskless individuals in the courtroom. Everyone had to wear a mask. There was nothing and this was justified, especially at the time, which was in 2020, before we had vaccines. There were ample justifications put in the record for why that was essential in this case. But here we're in an era where we don't have a mask requirement, and we're just going to let someone wear one if they feel like it. And so this would invite, and that's true of each and every case. And the other thing about the case that's cited most is Crittenden. Crittenden is a scenario where the defendant's insisting on a trial. He won't waive his right to a speedy trial, which I would say would be a competing right with your right to confront. And to me, there's an implication that if the defendant wanted to wait, he could have. And that's not really the scenario we're presented with here, where what it appears that someone can essentially, from this point going forward, just say, I don't feel comfortable wearing a mask. I would prefer to wear a mask. Or not even articulate that. Yep. Just show up with a mask.
Thank you. Your time has expired. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Dallas Anderson, and I represent the state of Texas. The issue before this court this morning is a straightforward question of whether or not the trial court's decision in this case to allow the victim to testify while wearing a face mask violated appellant's Sixth Amendment confrontation right. Appellant's assertion that his Sixth Amendment confrontation right was violated is incorrect, and nearly every federal and state court nationwide that has considered this exact issue has concluded that allowing a witness to testify while wearing a face mask does not violate an appellant's Sixth
Amendment. Is that a blanket rule? I mean, can a witness come in to any trial and say, I'm more comfortable wearing a mask, whether there's a pandemic or not? Is that okay?
No, Your Honor, because that would get to, and I'll kind of get into it, but there's a two-prong test that courts use to analyze this issue from Maryland v. Craig. The first prong of that test, which we've discussed already a little bit, is reliability. But the second prong of that test is whether an important public policy interest is served by the deviation in this case, allowing a witness to wear a mask. And so simply just allowing a witness to get up there and decide, well, today I want to wear a mask because I didn't like the way I looked this morning, doesn't serve an important public policy.
Well, let me ask you this, because I went back and looked at the emergency orders that preceded the 40th one, which was in effect when this case was tried. And I'd be interested to know what you infer from the Supreme Court's changed language from the 36th to the 38th to the 40th, because in the 36th, which was March 5th of 2021, we still had the mandatory language about, you know, what must happen. And then in Section 3F, it added, you know, that the courts have to take reasonable action, including requiring face coverings. So that's in there in March of 2021. Then we get to May of 21 when the 38th order is entered. We've still got the mandatory must language, but 3F drops the mask reference. That's in May. So presumably the Supreme Court wasn't thinking that masks were a big deal in May. And then by the time we get to July, the 40th order, now it's permissive. We may. There's no change to 3F, and now we've got a Section 6 that collapses the previous ones, which were all, you know, you must do this, you must do this, and now it's just like, courts are encouraged to adopt protocols. So by the time of this trial, can you really say that there was such a public interest, as evidenced by the Supreme Court orders, that justified this complaining witness testifying masked?
So according to the Texas Supreme Court, there seems to be. It's just that the way the policy is developing at this time is it's developing in a trajectory where we see it as accomplishing that public policy goal of protecting the courtroom with a permissive policy and sort of requiring a court to conduct a more strenuous test or something like that would be.
But the trial court here just had, as I understand it, just had the witnesses saying, oh, you know, that, well, indicating that she would just be more comfortable.
Well, the trial court also goes into the fact that it is in line, this policy of a permissive policy is in line with the Supreme Court's order, which prioritizes taking action that would protect the courtroom.
But we've also got a competing Sixth Amendment constitutional right involved.
Yep. And the way that that works, the way that these two interplay with each other, is courts are then required to conduct a two-part test to determine whether or not how a deviation, such as this type of deviation, violates a defendant's Sixth Amendment right. And the two-part test, which everybody is aware of, is first off, the first prong is reliability. Reliability has to be assured despite that deviation. And second, an important public policy goal has to be served. Kind of getting into this reliability prong first off, there are then four factors, of course, that courts consider here in Texas. Physical presence, observation of demeanor, oath, and cross-examination. Of course, oath and cross-examination are not at issue in this case.
Before you go into those, let me ask you this. Do you concede that, you know, obviously under Craig, that's where we get this finding of necessity requirement. Do you concede that in this case that there really wasn't a necessity finding made, other than if she wants to wear it, she can wear it?
That's correct, but courts don't always seem to courts that have considered this exact issue nationwide, federal courts, don't always conduct an analysis of whether or not the necessity finding was met. And so when we started to look at these four factors, what we can see is that, well, really, only three of the four factors are necessary in order to find that the reliability prong has been met. I think that's important to remember first off.
Right. And then Craig is a U.S. Supreme Court case, and they delineate that in the instance where you're going to basically curtail or infringe on the confrontation rights of the accused, then there has to be some kind of necessity finding that in the record itself. That's true. You agree with that? That is a correct statement of law.
Yeah, so that is correct, but there's a distinction that needs to be made, because the necessity finding in Craig, if you read it in context of the passage as a whole, what you'll see is that's a necessity finding regarding that specific public policy goal we're trying to serve. And that specific public policy goal in Craig, and in a lot of cases with this exact issue, is typically child sexual assault victims. And in this case, a necessity finding would be required. That would make sense, because the public policy goal we're trying to serve is protecting that specific child. So therefore, it makes sense that we want to do a necessity finding there regarding the specific circumstances.
Couldn't defendant, the appellant, argue that a necessity finding would be even more significant in this context, because from a public policy perspective, we're not worried about protecting little children. We're just concerned about a witness who's testifying who the jury cannot see their demeanor. I mean, that's really, you know, they could make that argument that it's even more important in this context for a necessity finding to be made.
My response to that would be that a necessity finding wouldn't make sense in light of the public policy goal being served, because what we're trying to do here is to protect the entire courtroom and its proceedings, and therefore a specific finding about, for example, the health circumstances of the witness, isn't really relevant, because we're trying to protect everybody in the courtroom. And this policy, while there might be other policies and other alternatives that might accomplish that, this policy nonetheless does accomplish it to some degree. So just to kind of get into a little bit address of some of the things that appellant said, first off, when we're looking at this physical presence element of that reliability prong, of course, the witness in this case testified physically present in the courtroom. And pandemic-era cases that have considered this exact issue typically don't even give much analysis to the physical presence element, because they're like, it seems to be satisfied right off the bat. The only distinction that appellant makes here is that, well, the victim here testified sort of behind her mask, like Romero, and therefore her accountability was reduced. But in Romero, what you got to look at is that the witness in that case subjectively believed that he was anonymous and he was wearing a full disguise. And so, and there's just no evidence in this case that the witness.
Well, is there a percentage of face being covered where a jury can't adequately assess somebody's demeanor, do you think?
That's the observation of demeanor factor. So what I would say is that also is a question of degree. Courts have, for example, the Crittenden case, which I cited in my brief, clearly makes the or concedes that, yes, a face mask does impact the observation of demeanor, but not to such a high enough degree that it violates a Sixth Amendment confrontation right. And the court makes pains to note that the jury doesn't have the right to be able to view every single potential factor that could lead to a good observation of demeanor. There's a limit there. And the state asserts, of course, that the jury was able to see the eyes of the victim when she testified. It was able to see her facial expressions, her emotions, some of her body language as well. And just because of the fact that the jury was not able to see her lower half of her nose and mouth does not mean that the observation of demeanor factor was detrimentally impacted. And that's exactly what the Crittenden court said. They went in, they said that very clearly, that it's not essential to be able to test.
I'll be candid. You know, my big concerns in this case are, can they really see demeanor? I mean, that's a big deal. You know, half of what happens in a courtroom is nonverbal. Maybe 85% of what happens in a courtroom is nonverbal, and despite what a lot of people like to believe. And then the other concern is, you know, I mean, put it this way. One thing I thought about is if a defendant, although it's rare, decided to testify in a case, and although the state does not have the confrontation rights that a defendant does, you know, I could see a prosecutor jumping up, kicking and screaming if the defendant tried to take the stand and said, I'm going to do it, but I'm going to wear a mask. And so I just, it's easy to make these arguments, but the problem is you have a jury who has to decide the demeanor of the witness and the credibility of the witness, and so much of that credibility. I mean, we don't know if they're sticking their tongue out at the defense attorney. We don't know if they are smiling, if they are frowning, if they are grimacing. Do you agree that that's something that's important for a jury to be able to observe?
Like the whole face, is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
No, I don't agree, actually. I think that being able to see the face is important, but not necessarily the whole face. There are cases that have considered this issue in terms of religious headscarves as well, and have held that that is also permissible, because, again, we're getting into we have to consider what public policy interest are we serving here. And in this case, you kind of mentioned, like, what would the state say if it was a defendant? Again, we can't separate the issues here. There has to be an important public policy goal being served.
By the summer of 2021, though, I mean, we've got vaccines, we've got treatments, we've got a lot more. I mean, would you agree that the public policy interest was a lot different in 2021 than it was in 2020, when nobody had any idea what was really going on, and it was much deadlier in its early phases?
For sure, I would agree with that. However, that's not part of the two-pronged test. Courts aren't required to engage in an analysis of, well, was this ever a more important interest at another time? Are there other alternatives we should have considered? That's not one of the prongs of the test. The only prongs of the test are, is there an important public policy interest being served? Courts are pretty clear that, yes, protecting the courtroom from COVID-19 is an important public policy goal. And then second, is reliability. Does reliability still exist in this case? And I think it's, again, we need to remember our backdrop here, that only three of those four factors of reliability are necessary when we're conducting this Craig analysis of
the first prong, protecting the courtroom from a pandemic, for example. I mean, obviously, we have a situation where they weren't required to wear a mask in the courtroom. That's you concede that, correct?
Yeah.
And this was just an option exercised by the complainant, the testifying witness. And obviously, in that instance, if anybody's being protected, I guess that the witness was protecting themselves at that point. Do you think that's legitimate enough to satisfy that first prong?
I think it is, and I think it's important to remember that the option that appellant asserts would actually go directly against this important public policy goal laid out by the Texas Supreme Court of protecting the courtroom and its participants from the threat of COVID-19, and allowing the defendant to make the choice for the witness, there's no question would go against that goal that the Supreme Court of Texas explicitly laid out. So just to...
Are there other governmental agencies saying that masks should still be worn during that period of time?
Other governmental agencies, I mean...
CDC recommendation
There were other courts for sure throughout the country nationwide that were requiring masks in their courtroom or having permissive policies. And there's a lot of, or there, it's easy to start to think, well, is it 2020 or 2021? There are state courts throughout the country, California, Minnesota, who have considered this exact issue. A couple of them I remember in February of 2022, State v. Motlin, that's from Minnesota, and People v. Alvarez, that's from California, that are 2022 decisions handed down from 2021 trials, where the courts have concluded, yeah, that was still an important public policy goal we needed to serve.
And is there any difference between something that's a requisite and a recommendation? I mean, you know, that's something that, you know, it's murky, you know. And obviously, if everybody had been required to wear masks in the courtroom, you'd be reminding us of that fact right now as we speak.
For sure. Yep. But I think the distinction there is that was the strategy put in place. And while definitely it would be a stronger case if masks were universally required, again, that's not a prong that courts are required to consider. Well, is there an alternative? Should we have done something else at this time? And no, all we ask is a goal being served? Is reliability preserved? And if you get yes on both of those, then there's no confrontation issue. And that's exactly what we have in this case, because actually all four factors of reliability are met, even though you only need three, and an important public policy goal was served, despite the fact that maybe a different policy, such as a requirement policy or something else, might have been more effective. That's just not an analysis that we conduct or that courts are required to conduct. So with that, I see I have a little time left. Unless the court has any more questions, I would hereby yield the rest of my time to the court.
Thank you very much.
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree with the characterization of the trial court's action here as some kind of policy. There was never an articulated policy. This is really more a reaction to a request by implication, which is that someone shows up in a mask and they said they're not going to get in the way. I'm not sure if that's exactly any kind of prescribed policy. The order that's cited is quite general. It says take any other reasonable action to avoid exposing court proceedings and participants to the threat of COVID-19. Clearly, the court didn't find it necessary to require everyone in the courtroom to wear masks. I'm not sure why allowing a single witness to wear a mask just because they chose to, they want to wear one, how that reflects some kind of reasonable action designed to avoid exposing proceedings and participants to COVID-19. Even if, at the very least, the witness should have been able to be required to articulate that had, in fact, been the reason, COVID-19, under oath. We don't even have that. We just have someone showing up in a mask. And that's what majorly distinguishes this from the cases, the pandemic cases, where we have these bright-line categorical rules where the defendant, presumably, at least in one case, the Crittenden, could have asked for a continuance so as to ensure that confrontation rights are violated or not violated. But this is reactive. This is just like in Coy or Maryland versus Craig, where we have one individual witness. In those cases, the child witnesses want to appear remotely. And so in Coy, it was just a general citation to protection of children. And the court said, no, that's not adequate. That's not enough. And in Craig, we have the same analysis. One's one-way circuit television, one's a board. But in Craig, we have an expert testify, these particular children in this particular case cannot testify in the presence of the defendant for these particular reasons. And they were unique to each and every individual.
But aren't you trying to divorce the facts here from the context we found ourselves in, where we had just come through the pandemic, where masks had been an accepted part of the protection for people as part of the pandemic. People were obviously still terrified about the pandemic. And to say that the judge misbalanced here because somebody wanted to wear a mask, doesn't it just, you're just trying to divorce us from the context this trial judge found himself
But we
in?
Don't know that she was, do we know whether she was terrified of COVID?
We don't know. That's not clear from the record what her reasons were for not wearing a mask. I do agree that COVID changed the landscape in terms of cultural norms and what's acceptable in terms of masks and stuff like that. But we had obtained vaccines. No one was wearing a mask. And so going forward, I think it's troublesome.
No one was wearing a mask.
Well,
November of 2021, no one was
I'm, in the courtroom, it's reasonable to infer from the record that none of the participants were wearing a mask. And no other, there was no other objection to any other witness. I think it's reasonable to infer that no other witness that testified was wearing a mask. So within that context, I think it's clear that that wasn't a concern for the participants in that particular proceeding. Whether in the prior to that, yes, there was concern about COVID and the need to wear masks, but going forward, can a witness just cite COVID or cite the flu or cite anything? I'm afraid I'm sick. I'm afraid I'll be sick. Can I want to wear a mask. Is that going to always be a way for a witness to testify against a defendant without really having to confront them truly face-to-face? Is a witness going to be able to do that? And, of course, in this case, we don't even have that. We don't even have an articulation that COVID was the concern. And for these reasons, the lack of particularized findings, I would urge the court to vacate the conviction and remand back to the trial court for new trial. Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Your argument has been quite helpful, and your case is submitted. With that.